Jeff here. Thanks for listening. Go to playvolutionhq.com/ccbag or click the link in the show notes for the show's archives, ways to connect, ways to support the show, information about happy hour, and more. Most prolific early learning podcast. I'm Jeff Johnson, coming to you from upstairs studio in the Snuggery along the Gulf of Mexico. With me, we've got Clevette. Clevette is coming to us live from her car at soccer practice.
Yep. How you doing? I'm good. Missed being on here.
Yeah. So is the kid a good soccer player? Is he just there for the apple and orange slices?
You know what? No, I think he's pretty good. I know that I'm his mom and people always say that, but he's improved and he's grown a lot. So we'll see how. Yes.
Good.
Soccer that's is his life right now.
Hey, so we got a topic. Before we get into that, I gotta get your take on something. I've been feeling I need a new hobby in my life.
Ooh.
And so I've got a list of three. I'm just going to roll them out one at a time in some episodes to see if I can get some feedback. So one I've been thinking about is surf fishing. Okay, so you know the people go, they'll stand like ankle or waist deep in the water, and they'll cast and they'll fish, and it looks like a relaxing thing to do, right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, but my problem is, I don't want all the hassle of having to have fishing tackle and get a fishing license and maybe
with your bare hands.
Maybe actually, I don't care. I the icky stuff, I don't care about that. It's just, I really don't want fish. If I want fish, I'll go to my fishmonger and get fish. So what I was thinking, I get myself a fishing rod. And then instead of putting any tackle on the end of it, I just tie like an old spark plug onto the end of it. And then I can just go stand and cast and listen to an audiobook or something and be outside. And I don't have to worry about catching anything, because it's very unlikely a sea bass or something's gonna bite on a old spark plug. And if the beach cops come by and like, hey, let me see your fishing license, I'm like, look, I just got a spark plug, don't even have a hook, not really fishing, it's fake fishing, what are you going to do? I don't have a license. So what do you think?
Whatever floats your boat, Jeff.
does it sound too weird or too eccentric?
I don't know. I mean, at this point, you're not going to use a real fishing rod or whatever it's called, right? At this point, use a branch.
No, it'd be a real fishing rod. Because I like the idea of casting and reeling it back in and casting. I just don't care about catching anything.
Oh, okay. Sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay, you said that like you're talking to a crazy person. Okay, well, anybody have thoughts about me becoming a fake fisher person? Let me know. I've got warm memories of fishing with my grandpa and stuff, but it seems like a lot of work to actually do it. What are your thoughts about fishing and worms and fish?
I don't have any experience fishing, but I'm going to say that I think maybe when people do it together, or like when it's, you know, someone that you love, like your grandpa or someone you care about, I think maybe it's not about really catching anything, but more the experience and time. So sure. Maybe fishing will be, well, I don't know.
You mean maybe I'll make a friend?
Maybe you'll make a friend.
I don't want a friend.
I mean, you know you don't want any, and you don't like any. But
I don't need any. I'm going to be there casting my spark plug out in the water, and some guy's going to come up and say, "Hey, want to be
maybe
friends?"
He's going to come out with his branch, and you know, a little twig hanging.
That would be almost the most uncomfortable thing that I could imagine. Like, hey, you want to be fishing buddies? I'd be, I just drowned myself. It would be too much for me. Okay. So that's on my list of possible hobbies. The others are equally unexciting. So what are we talking about?
Okay. I know when you asked me if I still wanted to do it and if I had anything to talk about, I don't even know what we can name this episode.
By the end, we'll know.
That's true. Okay, so I basically wanted to talk about children who are bilingual, multilingual, you know, who are enrolled in programs that are strictly like monolingual, and in this case, like English only. So, you know, children who have a like home language that's other than English, like whether it's Vietnamese, Spanish, like Russian, whatever it is, and go to school and everyone at school only speaks English. So just kind of explore that topic, maybe new ideas on how things can be done, rethink the way that things are done, and then open the door for any suggestions or hear how other people are doing it in the future.
Okay.
After
well,
this
where,
episode,
where do you want to start? I don't have a lot of experience with this. You know, back in my center director days, we had my only real experience is with Spanish speaking children who are, you know, bilingual, and most of them came to us so young that Spanish was their home language, but they were barely speaking that, although they'd been hearing it their whole life. We were mostly, I mean, except for some kids that were speaking Spanish and English and learning both at the same time, it was of course a mostly English program, because this is 25 years ago in the middle of Iowa. So not a lot of diversity. And it's changed over the decades, and it's changed everywhere in the United States. So I think dealing with multiple language in the classroom is a much more prevalent thing across the country. And I think it hasn't come up on the show before. So I'm glad we're talking about it, but I don't know much. So inform me.
Yeah. I think you also talked about something I wanted to explain. So I learned about this sort of thing a lot from my professor when I did my undergrad, and she's absolutely amazing. But then last night when I was trying to find things, I'm like, I don't even know what the hell to write. But one thing that I did learn about, and one thing that you said, was technically the children, they're called dual language learners. So it's basically, you know, children who are learning two or more languages at the same time, or they're learning a second language while continuing to develop like their home or first language.
Yeah.
So yeah, exactly what you just said. But that's kind of what I wanted to explore too. And just, I think you're right. I think 2010, even 5 years ago, like it was really like difficult, I guess, for these families and children.
Sure.
And I think things are slowly changing, but I don't know if I think that things can be better. Like, you know, it's not like 1975 anymore. Like, there's so much that we know. And I think that with everything that we know, things should have kind of caught up by now, I guess.
So what does better and caught up look like to you? What would you like to see?
Honestly, when I was looking at these things, you're going to hate me, but I asked,
I doubt it.
I asked ChatGPT for some help, and I said, let me see what this thing is going to tell me. Sure. So it came up with the basic things, which are good points, I think, for someone who doesn't have any idea or is not familiar with like ECE, anything, child development, anything. But a lot of the things it brought up were like basic things that I think that should already be happening. But I also know that common sense is not common. So I think some of those things were like, I'm going to read it to you. So understand the experience of families and children, importance of creating a comfortable environment for families, and introduce, other things like, what was it? Like families building community, like other concerns, like asking for families to be more involved, like to come in and like talk to the children or just be more involved, I guess. But I think those things should be happening whether the children speak that language or not. And I'm just like,
sure.
Shouldn't you be doing that already? But one thing that I'm kind of wanted to talk about is something that I see a lot. And the program that I currently work at is only English, but the families that we serve are, I'm going to say, like 90% like Mandarin speaking families. Most of those families, those adults in their families do not speak any English whatsoever. They only know how to say hi and thank you, and that's it. I have been there for 3 years now, and I'm also just kind of realizing, like, holy shit, we don't have absolutely any written information in these families' language. Like, how do they know, you know, what they're signing up for if we don't have anything in the language that they speak? And I thought that was kind of like shocking and surprising. And then at the same time, I'm like, why the hell am I just thinking about this right now? So I think that's one thing like that programs should have is just written information about your program. It could be a simple flyer that you have on your online website, but just in writing. That way, if people come or they ask information and they don't speak English, you can still tell them about your school in the language that they speak.
So playing devil's advocate, how many languages do you do that with?
At my program?
Well, no, I mean, in your dream program.
And I think that's another thing that it's just like, I think when you try to include everyone, it's like, there's always that fear of like, well, we want to be inclusive, you know, to everyone. So how many languages do we do it for? Like, do we do all the languages in the world? Like, do we do the languages that are most commonly spoken in our program or in the community that our program is located in? But I think that would be a great opportunity for the program to do a poll.
I think you don't do it in any other languages because, stick with me here, because the technology already exists. Yeah. That a parent can take that handbook and hold their phone up to a page of written English and have it translated into whatever language they need it translated to. So sure. I think programs investing in the cost of having their handbooks and all of their paperwork in multiple languages, it drives up the cost of caregiving. And think about the idea that every time you make a change to your policy and update your handbook, you not only change it in one language, but maybe you have to change it in six. So I would make sure I had apps that I trusted to recommend if parents that weren't already using that technology. And I think a lot of, especially younger families with younger kids, I would imagine they're already using that technology. So I don't know if that's really an issue, is it? Or am I being too pie in the sky butterflies?
No, I mean, you're kind of right. But I do, if you're not printing any of these things and they're digital anyway, how hard is it to just have somebody translate or interpret everything you want to say in that language? It doesn't have to be all the languages. That's what I mean. Like, if you already know that most of the families in your program speak a certain language and nothing else, Like, why aren't you kind of thinking about that? Like, you can trust or you can hope that these families have access to technology on their phones or know how to use these things. Or, you know, I know in my case, like a lot of the children who get picked up are not even their parents. It's like family members and they're older and they have absolutely no idea what I'm seeing. They cannot even tell me hi. So, I mean, in that case, it's different, but you can hope that they'll use that, but they might not always. But anyway.
Sure. Sure. But how are the kids doing on the program?
How are they doing?
Yeah. I mean, I assume it's kind of a submersive program. If the classroom is focused on English and mm-hmm. they aren't native English speakers, are they struggling? Are they striving? Are they learning? What's going on?
I think all of the above. It's really hard in the beginning of the school year. And that's another thing that I kind of wrote down in my notes, like the emotional experience and concerns of the families.
Sure.
I can only speak from my experience and what I see and hear, but I think that there's a lot of shame, like in the families not speaking or understanding English, like for both the adults and the children. It's kind of like, oh, like, how do you not know? Or kind of like that approach. There is a lot of pressures on the adults to kind of rush their children into learning English. And you know, being able to communicate. And I don't know what it's like to leave my child with someone who I cannot communicate with. So I try my best to kind of be like nice and gentle and all those things like that I regularly try to be, but even more with them, just because it's hard when you are doing pickup or drop off and there's so all these people coming in and out. In a perfect world, sure, you'd want to use Google Translate because it can communicate a live conversation. But when there's kids in the background, like screaming, laughing, yeah. playing with, like, it doesn't happen successfully. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of tough. So I always try to, you know, be nice, extra nicer to them, because I'm sure it's tough to leave your kid with a stranger who you can't say, hey, we just got to this country a few months back. They don't speak any English. Like, I don't speak any English. This is their first time at school. They're probably going to have a really rough day. Like, they cannot tell me any of that. When they come and pick them up, like, they can't ask me, hey, how was their day? Like, were they okay? I was worried. But like, there's none of that. So I always kind of try to be really understanding and I guess just kind of gentle with that experience in the beginning of the year, especially because they're not able to tell me any of these things. And I can just hope that they fill out the family forms and fill out all of those things. But even with Google Translate or things like that, I know that they try to use them because I've seen it firsthand. I speak Spanish. So sometimes when I use it and I'm like, oh, let me see if this is accurate, it's completely butchers what you're trying to say. And it's not the same thing. So I can see those things sometimes being filled out.
Sure.
And it doesn't really make sense in English. I can kind of make out what they're trying to say. But AI is not going to, I think, pick up the emotion or the context that you're trying to explain something in.
Yeah. How do those parents find your program?
I think word of mouth. So the program that I work for is like very prestigious. Like everybody, mm-hmm. you know, I think is just more of a, I think having your kid go there means more of like, oh, Jeff goes to that school. Like, oh yes, Jeff's family is able to pay, but like, it's more of that.
Okay.
Not necessarily, you know, they have a great, you know, I don't know, curriculum or whatever it is, or they're, you know, play this, or they have an awesome mud pit. That's why I want my kid to go there. Like, it's none of those things, I don't think.
Maybe it's because they're going there and they're learning English.
Yes, they people say that's the reason why they want
And
them to go there.
I mean, and that, I mean that, and so if they're learning the new language that they can bring home, that's a, I mean, that's an important thing. I mean, my family's experience with this was in the 1800s when my Norwegian and Swedish grandparents showed up in bitterly cold North Dakota, not speaking English. And I remember my great grandmother, she was like in her 90s when I was four or five, like close to 100, and when I was four or five, back in the 70s, and she barely spoke a word of English, but her kids did, and her grandkids certainly did, and that's kind of way the United States has worked for a long time. I think when it comes to the kids in the program, the best way to be supportive of multi-language children is the thing that we're always trying to be supportive with on this podcast is child-directed play. The because the immersion in play, kids who want to play together figure out how to communicate. And my experience is kids would come in like 3 years old and have very little English and lots of Spanish, or at least age-appropriate levels of Spanish. And very quickly, they would be picking up English words, and their new playmates would be picking up Spanish words, and they just made it work. I think sitting down and trying to do language learning in circle time with kids that age is pretty. I mean, it's as ineffective as all the other things we try to do in circle time, I think. What's your experience with kids and play and language learning?
No, I think you're right. I think kids who want to play with one another will definitely find a way. I see it all the time, and it's kind of cute to see, like, they're talking to each other or using like gestures or like showing each other things, or they're like, oh yeah,
Yeah.
like, so it's kind of cool that they figured out completely on their own. So it's pretty cool to see, and kind of awesome to see the learning still happening even though they don't speak the English language. But yeah, I think that's okay. I think what I'm not okay with is like telling children that they're not allowed to speak their home language at school and that they can only
Sure.
speak English. I'm surprised that people are still doing that. And I'm just kind of like, is that really okay? Like, I know that you want them to speak English, but like, show me research where it says that you're going to learn a language by no longer speaking your own language. And like, that's, I don't think that that's how your brain works. I think it's okay for you to still speak those languages, like your home language and whatever other language you wanted to, and another one. Like, you don't have to stop speaking all these languages just to be able to learn one more, is what I'm kind of trying to say, I
Yeah,
guess.
and my understanding is if you're a dual language learner, you're learning both languages at the same time, and you're
Exactly.
doing it, especially when you're very young, you're doing it effectively because in a preschool classroom, everybody in an English focused program, everybody is a as a English learner
Yeah.
because you're still, even if you're three or four or five, you're still brand new to the language. So
Yes.
everybody's kind of on the same level. And then one thing I think programs should be careful of is understanding code mixing, which is when kids will use words from multiple languages because they might only know the word for dog in one language, and so they use the language that they know, and that's not a we shouldn't want to correct that. That's just their brain
Yeah.
processing things, and they'll eventually pick up
Yes.
the language the word for whatever it is, the terminology in both languages.
Yeah.
And so some programs do kind of scold when they do that code mixing, and that's kind of an issue. Another thing I was thinking about is in an average classroom, even a classroom full of all English speaking kids, or if it's a Spanish classroom, I guess a monolithic language, there are different levels of language knowledge across the board, because a child who comes into a preschool classroom who has a home life where there's lots of conversation and lots of talk and lots of reading going on has a much bigger working vocabulary and understanding of the language than a child who's coming from a home setting where everybody's just staring at screens and there isn't a lot of talking going on. And so even in a monolithic language classroom, you can have that diversity in how well kids or how quickly kids pick up language. And I would argue the same problem communicating with parents, because my experience is I've worked with some English only speaking families that had a hard time understanding what I was talking to them about, even though they'd been speaking English their whole life. So it's really kind of a fascinating thing. What else should we touch on?
That's true. That's true. No, I think you're hitting all the top all the things I kind of wanted to talk about too. I don't remember where it was that I read this, but I remember reading something about like if you do assessments or whatever you want to call them at your program, that you should do your best to get them done in the child's home language. Why did you flinch? Did it get blurry?
My got blurry for a second and I had to
Yeah,
refocus myself.
okay, I saw that too. I was like, oh, so I don't know how to speak Mandarin. I took a
What?
class in undergrad a long time ago, and I actually enrolled in another one this semester because I wanted to communicate better with the kids. So when it was my turn to do the assessments, because that's what I have to do as part of my job, I was asking some of the kids who don't speak English very well yet, to tell me in Mandarin. And I noticed that when I asked them only in English, they weren't able to communicate certain things to me. But when I asked them in Mandarin, they were able to communicate everything to me. So I think that's another thing that maybe we can try to do. And because I think with like dual language learners, sometimes there's this, I don't even know what to call it, not stereotype or myth or I don't know, ignorance. I don't know. I think people think that because they don't speak English, that they don't know things. But if you just ask them, maybe in their home language, you'll be able to kind of realize, like, oh shit, they do know it. They just don't know what the hell I'm saying because they don't understand me. And I think sometimes like in elementary school too with older children, I think a lot of teachers will say, oh no, like they're struggling in this or there's something going on, you need to do an evaluation or this and that. Like they're just not understanding, they're not grasping. But it could also be like maybe it's a language where they're not understanding you because it's not their home language. They're not understanding you at all. Not so much that they're not understanding the like the subject or the information that you're trying to teach them.
And I how did your how did how do you how confident are you feeling in Mandarin now?
So before, on a scale from 0 to 10, I understood zero, like one. I think now I'm at a 1.5.
Well, it's a lot better than I am. I look and look, I think the idea of language immersive classrooms, multilingual immersive classrooms is a great idea because, in my experience, they started trying to teach second languages in like middle school. And I took, and I've talked about it on the podcast before, I took 3 years of Spanish. And I can, I can ask for a beer and how to get to the beach. It's about all I've got. And because the only reason I was there is because, Tammy Sims was there and she just caught my eye. And, I didn't pay attention.
Such a fake name, Jeff.
That's a, it's a very real name. Tammy Sims. I got a picture of her in my head that will never go away. And I didn't catch a word in 3 years of middle school and high school Spanish. I was very disappointed because she moved and there I was having wasted many hours of my life and not learned anything. I don't know if that's got to do with anything, but every time I think about Spanish, I think about Tammy Sims. Hey, Tammy, you listen and don't look me up. I don't need any trouble in my life.
Oh my gosh.
Josh. So what's our takeaway? Parent relationships are probably the biggest challenge. And it sounds like the kids get along okay because kids are pretty flexible and adaptable.
Oh yes, but you know what? It's tough because I think that if you don't know what they're saying, it's very easily to jump to conclusions.
Sure.
I think with taking this class and just kind of practicing more, I also realized they talk shit about me behind my back. I was like, what did you just say? Like, you're saying that I'm big. Are you saying I'm fat? Like, so just things like that, that could have just gone over my head. But now I'm like, no, that's not nice. And I think, I don't know, Mandarin is so interesting because it's the tone, like, it just sounds like you're yelling all the time. So, you know, when you're listening to conversations, like, when I'm listening to the kids' conversations, like, I don't know if they're fighting. I don't know if they're excited, besides from their facial expressions. And I think before it was really easy for me to just kind of say, like, oh, no, like, you need to stop. Like, I don't know what's happening, like, blah, blah. But now I'm kind of, like, trying to figure it out. But I think that also happens, like, in English. Like, I think people just jump right in and without trying to figure out what's happening first. Like, it's hard too when you don't know what they're saying, when they don't know what you're saying. Like, they're trying to explain to you, like, you know, Tammy Sims over here took my shovel and she's not giving it back to me even though I told her to give it back. Like, that doesn't happen. So I think that relationship with the children is also affected because it just makes things a lot more challenging.
Sure. And I mean, the solution is just say the thing you're trying to make clear. Say it louder in English. That's a totally thing people do, right? You're trying to explain something to somebody and they don't understand it because they don't know English, and then you talk louder, louder and slower.
Yeah.
Is that just an English thing, or do people do that in other languages too when they get frustrated and they're having a hard time explaining something? You ever hear anybody do that? So does anybody speaking Spanish ever do that when they're talking to somebody who doesn't understand Spanish?
Maybe.
I don't know. I didn't know if it was just an English thing.
Maybe you're right. I guess it just sounds more racist in English when other people do it, but maybe if other people do it too, like, I don't know. I never noticed that. I'll pay more attention.
Yeah. Let me know. I love it that the kids are talking crap about you in Mandarin. That makes me very happy.
And then I tell them something because I'm like, I remember I wasn't scolding her, but I was just having a stern talk with her. And then I said, no, like, I told you that you may not do that, like, blah, blah, blah. please don't do that anymore. And I walk away and I hear her saying, did you hear her? Did you hear the teacher? Blah, 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 blah. And I didn't understand the rest. And I turned around. I was like, I know you're talking about me, so please stop. And she just looked at me and she was like, oh, shit. Like, but yeah, she's also one of my favorite students. Like, she is such a pain in my butt, but she is so funny. Like, and yeah, I think not being able to communicate can definitely impact your relationship with the children and the sure. families. Like, it's hard to make that connection with them and just kind of find common ground like you usually do. It's hard, but I think it's not impossible. Like, it can still happen. I think if you're passionate about what you do and you really care, like, about the children and you care about their families, I think there's not going to be an excuse in the way, whether they speak English or Spanish or whatever it is. Like, it's still, you're still going to give it your all, I think. Why are you rolling your eyes? What are you doing?
Well, because I'm having a communication problem with somebody. Slinky Dog is sitting next to me and putting his massive paw up on my leg and trying to get my attention and almost knocking me over. And I'm giving him an eyeball, telling him, hey, dude, wait a little bit. Because he apparently thinks he needs my attention now. And speaking dog is difficult, too. I'm not very good at it.
Wait, one more thing.
I was gonna say, go ahead.
I know that every program has different needs and different budgets. One thing that has been really helpful where I work is having an interpreter. Especially, we have to do parent-teacher conferences. So especially when we do that, because I'm not able to give them, like, written information in Mandarin, but at least knowing that I have the interpreter there, it makes things easier for me to, and I feel kind of relieved, like, oh, okay, like, they're going to hear it, like, they're going to know, or, you know, blah, 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 whatever it is. But as nice as that is, like, it also sucks that I'm only able to communicate with that in that much depth and, like, one-on-one only twice a year.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't make me feel good. I think that we can do better. Yeah. And also, I think having staff in a community that, you know, they speak the same language as your surrounding community would be so nice. Like, I know it's not a perfect world and a perfect program, but I think that that would be nice for the kids to see an adult who looks like them and who speaks the same language as them.
Sure. I was going to ask, do you have staff in the program that speak Mandarin?
Nope.
Huh.
Yeah. I'm the closest thing they got, so.
with your 1.5.
With my broken Mandarin.
Well, and then, you know, we've been mostly talking about bilingual. There are classrooms out there, I'm sure, that are dealing with kids that are speaking three or four or five or more different languages. And that just makes things more of a challenge, I would imagine. Okay. If you're working in one of those programs and listen to this podcast and have thoughts, I'd like to hear from you. Anything else we should talk about before we wrap this up?
No, I think
did we accomplish anything?
I don't know.
Yeah, we had a conversation. Maybe should I add Mandarin to my hobby list?
Yes.
Would learning Mandarin be a good hobby for me?
Yes.
What would I do with it? I can't.
I don't know. Learn Spanish. We can have a podcast in Spanish one day.
Yeah. Dos cervezas, por favor.
Tú puedes, Jeff. Si quieres, tú puedes.
¿Qué?
I said you could do it, Jeff. If you want it, you can do it.
Yo soy muy guapo.
Oh, sí.
¿No?
Muy guapa. Ajá. Lo que tú digas.
¿Dónde está la playa? La playa aquí. Yeah, that's the entire extent of my Spanish. Maybe I could be listening to Spanish language immersion learning stuff while I'm fake fishing.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe that would be a thing.
You gotta also practice this one. ¿Dónde está mi esposa?
Where's my wife? My
Yeah.
spouse?
Oh,
Yeah.
yeah.
Hey, look at me. Yeah, I don't know where she is. I hope she comes back. Hey, listeners, this has been the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast, the world's longest, money, and most prolific. I can't even look,
Prolific.
I can't even speak English. How can I learn a second language? The world's longest running and most prolific early learning podcast that wants you to, I don't know, go to the beach and have a beer, I guess. That's only a good thing.
Sorry,
Back
y'all. This one
soon.
was not a good one.
No, don't say that. This is none of look. The show is long running and prolific. Nobody ever said anything about it being good. Thanks for listening. Back soon. Bye-bye. No, I've never made claims that there's anything good about this show. It's just been around for a long time.
That's true. You're right. You're right.
But if any episode that's got Clevette on it is a good episode. So there's that.
That's true. That's true.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.